That is the latest news.
Oh, my God. You see, this is why, of all the examples of people who started out as listeners, this is the problem when you start bringing up names anecdotally. First of all, it wasn't Corey's birthday. I'll do it on your birthday. How could I leave out Corey the Redneck Yard Boy? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you may have just ruined our chances for getting some sausage and ham.
I just got a text. We'll call Jen Crawford to haul your trampoline. Actually, her father
or bacon,
is.
Bacon.
actually, her dad's going to take it apart and haul it. But oh, yeah, Corey. Gosh, where would I be without? The problem is you, Corey, living in Petersburg.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Same thing for you, Ken. Keep it quiet in there. Choosing Murfreesboro. Imagine how much closer our families would be if you would live in a real city. Ken?
I'm sorry, Brother Michael. I have to catch this press conference on the murderer, or rather accused murderer.
No, I was just going to
apologize. Who was apprehended this
morning. And I was just going to apologize to everybody in Murfreesboro that I, in order to rail you, I just railed Murfreesboro. But no, that's only because we would be so, yeah, where would I be without Corey the Redneck? So, yes, I'm glad you were born as well. That's news. Ken's grabbing the other stuff. Let's do traffic and weather together. I'll give you the currents in a moment. But first, traffic time.
Information fueled, opinion driven. This is the Michael DelGiorno Show, Supertalk 99.7.
Oh, now I'm racking my brain. Who else did I leave out? I should go through my phone. I was just trying to use a simple analogy. Now I know why Jesus never brought up names in his analogies. Let me tell you about a young king's son. Which one? Not. I don't give names in my analogy. I love you, Corey the Yard Boy. You know that. And I love you, Murfreesboro. I just wish Ken was closer. I think we'd be much better friends. And now Dan's moving. So he won't even be close. But yes, that was our personal segment on how God weaves and crafts just the right people into our lives for a reason, for a season, and we're really lucky for a lifetime. He's a good God, better than we could be to ourselves, that's for sure. All right, let me get to, you know, talk shows shouldn't have favorite listeners, and they shouldn't, certainly shouldn't have favorite stories. And we covered with Congressman Desjarlais and with David Zanotti what is strike 2.5 for Donald Trump and certainly strike 3 for Paul Ryan, for Mitch McConnell, and for many we call establishment Republicans. The truth of the matter is Donald Trump needs to learn his lesson. There are ours in that swamp. There are critters with ours on their back in that swamp too. And several of them that are just as left as the ones he defeated and want him to fail just as much as the left. He needs to stop listening to attorneys, stop listening to advisors, stop listening to Paul Ryan. And he needs to realize real quickly, he's the most in tune with us. He's the most courageous. He's the one with the best plan, and he's the smartest guy in the room, and he keeps getting betrayed. And once he gets to 3 strikes, I'm sorry, but he's out too. And that's what this temporary bill is. Proof, I cannot come up with a better analogy than this. Had you gone into a coma on November 5th, and I showed you this budget, you'd swear Hillary won. That's an indictment of all Republicans and certainly this president. So we covered the big story, but this is by far and away my favorite story. Now, there's 3 things I want to say first. One, you know, you might ask yourself, is it just me or are more people killing people with guns? No, the narrative in our culture and in our society, the ability to now do things like others because of its coverage or inspiration, even though it's evil, or to be able to film it live and air it live on Facebook. I mean, kind of with Facebook, you've given every human being their own national network. That's a scary thing. And that's why we're seeing growing narcissism, growing unhappiness. First of all, everybody is projecting a life instead of living one. And their projected life isn't real, but it's making those who are living in reality think everybody else is having more fun than them. Everybody else has a better husband than them. Everybody else has a better wife than them. Everybody else has better kids than them. Oh, the negativities, they're a mile long, and a lot of them are new. What isn't new is, what happens is you get a narrative or a focus. One of the very first Bible studies I ever went to, the guy was, his name was Ken Bowman, or Ken or Mark Bowman, can't remember now. But and the point of the Bible study was, we're not to live in this don't do lifestyle. Oh, now I'm a Christian. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't think that. I can't think that. I can't do this. Just walk with Jesus. Just love him as you are. And see what he, just hanging out with him, creates in you. Just that simple. When he reveals to you what delights him, what's good for you, what he has for you, and what's dangerous and what's hurting you and holding you back, you'll make a volitional choice. And but he had an analogy. He said, if I tell you don't think about red monkey, all you'll think about is red monkey. I think that's a big problem we have with our walk with Christ. Now, I believe in addictions, and there are people that are addicted to porn, and I get that, just like I'm addicted to nicotine. But a lot of it is, you know, don't think about it, don't look at it, don't look at it, don't look. You spend your whole day thinking about, don't look at porn, don't look at porn. Of course you're going to look at porn. So I think, in reality, same amount of people are shooting everybody. Just like somebody got stabbed to death. We just don't hyper-focus on knives. Somebody gets beat to death with a baseball bat, and then we don't, you know, publicize everybody that does something with a baseball bat. So I think a little bit of it is our focus. There's a lot of people controlling narratives that want you to think guns are doing it all. No, people are. People with destroyed lives, destroyed souls, destroyed hope because they've abandoned a real God. And they've been sold a lie by culture that gods don't matter or all gods are the same. Moral relativism, and it's a failure. And we've got wounded, hurting, hopeless, ready to kill somebody else or kill themselves, people everywhere. And the weapon they choose is the weapon they choose. Whether they decide to kill others before they kill themselves, that's sometimes the case. So I do think we see this more because we're looking for it more. Every time somebody shoots somebody, if you're looking for cops being bad to blacks, every time there's any kind of interaction between a white cop and a black person, we're going to hyperanalyze it. And so it's going to feel like more. And then in some cases, in certain places, it could be more and it could be influenced by something new. Well, one of these focuses now is airlines, right? I guarantee you that doctor's not the first person to be drug off a plane. I guarantee you that the other day, although I got to tell you, it was hysterical, to watch a pilot leave the cockpit, walk up the ramp, come into the gate area where two women are fighting, and grab one and smack her. That is kind of a bad moment. I don't know that. I think if anybody had done that, we'd hear it. But obviously, there's a microscope on the airlines now. And so every time there's a hiccup on the ground or in the air or any kind of relations between airlines and passengers, you're going to hear about it. So you're left with this feeling, like the same thing with guns, right? All of a sudden, we can't fly anymore? People don't know how to behave at an airport? They're nuts? Suddenly we got flight attendants that don't say bye-bye, bye-bye. They say, psh, psh, psh. You know, what's going on up there? Well, the narrative is bringing it up. But what makes this my favorite story? The notion that Congress would be sitting down telling airline executives how to run their company. Now I'll cut right to the chase. This is our mentality. You see, we used to be a free people, protected in liberty, personally responsible, moral, and self-governed. Now we can't do anything. Now we need volunteers at church to teach our kids the Bible because I guess parents don't know how to anymore. We need private coaches to teach them skills. What, because dad doesn't have time to teach baseball the way he learned it to his own kid? And somewhere along the line now, it's gotten to the point where every problem in life is the government's to solve. Now, shame on you, the people of the we, the people, for turning to the government. And shame on them for wanting to be all things. Now, healthcare, that's one topic. But the notion that we need the government, $20+ trillion in debt, failing at the average member of Congress or government or agency, and the level of failure would be a laughingstock firing in any private business, right? The notion that Congress, who can't even do its business and have done so $20 trillion in debt, would tell airlines how to run their companies. Do I even need to add any more description to that? While, you know, things are really getting tight at home, something's wrong with this budget. Maybe I've spent too much. How do I get out of this? Let me go find the most reckless spending, bankrupt five times moron on earth to help me dig my family out of this problem. You better go see Dave Ramsey, you idiot. You know what I mean? Congress. All right, so that's the setup, right? Now let me just read you the story. Congress tells airline executives to improve service or they will act. Show me that in the Constitution. So let me get this straight. Let me get this straight. We the sheeple, we're incapable of doing it. We couldn't pick a different airline. We couldn't pick a train. We couldn't drive. We need members of Congress, $20 trillion in debt, to ship them up or ship them out. And you know, when Congress is done meddling, you're the one that's going to get screwed. One guy gets drugged off a plane because he wouldn't get up. Next thing you know, there's $10,000 payouts. Next thing you know, they're not going to overbook, which means you're going to start paying more for your seat. They'll build it in. I mean, everything Congress steps in and does, you end up paying for, not them. Oh, yeah, that's just who you want to meddle and jump in to the rescue. Congress told airline executives yesterday, improve your service or we will take action, as they appeared before the lawmakers on Capitol Hill. Among them was the United Airlines CEO, Oscar Munoz, who reportedly apologized for last month's incident in which the passenger, David Dow, was violently dragged off the flight because he violently wouldn't go. American Airlines Senior Vice President Kerry Filipovich also apologized for another recent incident in which a male flight attendant nearly hit a woman holding a baby with the stroller. Oh, yeah, that's the first time some woman wouldn't give her stroller as she was supposed to, and they had to take the stroller. Then she won't let go, so he takes it and he yanks it. I mean, you're like empowering every dumb passenger. You know, the ones when we're standing there in seat 28D wondering, how the hell long does it take these people to stand up, grab their bag, and walk forward? We're going to empower these mindless morons to act even stupider and embolden them, knowing that they're going to get a $10,000 check, knowing they're going to get a big fat lawsuit, or Congress is going to step in and destroy the airline for them. Well, video of both incidents went viral. So, yeah, you have the roll of phones and what they record, and then the internet and how things go viral. So, this stuff isn't happening more, it's just being seen more. You know, it used to be if you were on a plane and you let a fart and it stunk, just the people in the two rows in front of you, probably through process of elimination, figured out you farted. You could fart on a plane right now. Somebody's probably shooting it with their phone and everybody's reaction. You giggling. And the next thing you know, you're viral and the whole world knows. They make every personal fart a public viral crisis. Okay, maybe I went too far with that analogy. GOP Representative Bill Schuster of Pennsylvania told the executives to make improvements or else. Can you imagine? Congress needs to make some improvements or else, but they never have an or else. Who do you think is a bigger threat to your life? A 80% proclivity gay flight attendant or Congress? Democratic Representative Michael Capano of Massachusetts cited things like Baggage fees? Oh, my. Long lines? Now Congress is going to step in because they have long lines? Anybody gone and got anything government? When's the last time you got your driver's license? Your tags? your inspection? Oh, seriously. Go apply for disability with Social Security. Try to negotiate a payment plan for your IRS tax bill. Here's government that has failed at everything. They're the worst at everything. They want to take over the airlines and overbooking and long lines and baggage fees. You know, Congress that has carried out a war on energy, that has driven up fuel prices, that drive up airline tickets, and make the margins worse. If you want to keep treating us this way, fine, they threaten. But there will come a day when Congress won't accept it anymore, and on behalf of the American people, we will act. Bigger than a giraffe. I don't know how they did it with a straight face. I don't know why every passenger of commercial airlines, I don't know why every American citizen, I don't know why every newspaper reporter, every television anchor, every talk show host isn't saying, well, this is my favorite story of the day. Are you kidding me? I won't even use pot calling the kettle. The biggest screw up in human history, the United States government and its career, they stay till they die, worthless politicians trying to tell the airlines who have to deliver a profit and their passengers and all of their items and put up with jerks every day by the tens of thousands with great hyper accountability. Have a Congress, $20 trillion in debt, who haven't created a single program that freaking works, telling them how to run their business. Are you kidding me? Nothing's energized me more to vote in my life. Needless to say, my favorite story of the day. It's 11:25. How can it be? Final segment already? 11:39, 21 minutes before 12 noon in the Dan Mandis Show. Sunny and 71 on our way to a high today of 81. We do have a chance of scattered showers. Some in the forecast for late afternoon, early evening, more likely late night and overnight. 81 a high, 71 now. Preds won, as you know, 2-1. They now are up 3-1 and 1 away from the Western Conference Final. Ryan Ellis and James Neal with the goals. Ryan Ellis with the complete game in Pekka. Just another spectacular performance. Game 5, Friday night, 7 o'clock in St. Louis. All right, final top three stories, and I gave you my favorite segment ago. Now I got to do the last two. We start with Hillary Clinton, who sits down one-on-one with Christina Amanpour from CNN, of course, Clinton News Network. And Hillary said yesterday that she takes responsibility for losing the presidential election. It's one of those where she says that one statement, and then, you know, if I said I take responsibility for this, there's nothing after that. But Hillary, by the time you add up everything Hillary says, she doesn't take responsibility for her losing at all. But the leftist media presents as, oh, she takes responsibility for losing the election. But she does also assert, in other words, this is what she really blames her loss on, the results influenced by FBI Director James Comey's letter 10 days before the election and Russian hacking of the DNC and the release of those stolen emails. Oh, and then later she'll bring up misogyny and other issues. Clinton spoke about the election in the one-on-one interview. She said it wasn't a perfect campaign, but there's no such thing. Well, there is no such thing as a perfect campaign, just like there's no such thing as a perfect football team. But one ends up being better and wins. And I think historians will look at this as a terrible candidate and a terrible campaign. A candidate riddled in scandal. A candidate who had 7.5 to 8 out of 10 people thought she was a liar and untrustworthy. That's a bad candidate. She also, I'll add this because most people don't talk about it, Her party, that's what WikiLeaks really revealed. Her party wanted Bernie Sanders. I mean, her voters, I mean, the voters that are Democrat wanted Bernie Sanders. Her party got involved and meddled in the primary. And they were in cahoots with the media. So what WikiLeaks revealed is a dishonest Hillary, a dishonest DNC, and a dishonest media, all in cahoots to screw Bernie Sanders. It's what it revealed, not that it was revealed, that is to blame. But she takes no responsibility that they had done all those things. Oh, she took the questions early before the debate. And that led to what people already knew about her. She's a liar. She's untrustworthy. And as I always say, Bernie Sanders was kind of like the Donald Trump for the far left, a socialist. He was the outsider. She was the epitome of establishment in a referendum election against establishment politicians. Oh, there are any number of reasons why Hillary lost, but none of them are what she thinks or how she views it, and it's sure as heck not taking responsibility. It wasn't a perfect campaign. There's no such thing. No, it was one of the worst ever. But I was on the way to winning until a combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th, and then the Russian WikiLeaks. That raised doubts in the minds of the people who were inclined to vote for me, but got scared off. If the election were held October 27th, I would be president. First of all, I don't know that that's true because the polls were so wrong. Secondly, I guess you could say that if the Kentucky Derby in 1973 was 2 furlongs less, Sham would have won and not Secretariat. But it wasn't. About Russia, she said, Vladimir Putin, well, he certainly interfered in our election. Certainly. And it's clear he interfered to hurt me and to help my opponent. Then asked, were you a victim of misogyny? Did you lose because you're a woman? Oh, I think it played a role. Very much a part of the landscape politically, socially, economically. You know, looking to the future, I'm now back to being an activist citizen and part of the resistance. That's what they are. They're professional resistance to America, to America's voice, and to America's desires, and to America's decision. They're resistance. They're resistance to cops, resistance to capitalism, resistance to tax cuts, resistance to any protection for the unborn, resistance to any Second Amendment right or liberty that God gave you, that your founding fathers acknowledged that they would love to take away. Despicable. Trump later tweeted, FBI Director Comey was the best thing that ever happened to Hillary Clinton in that she got a free pass for her many bad deeds. And the phony Trump-Russia story was an excuse used by Democrats as justification for losing the election. I don't know, perhaps maybe I just ran a better campaign? Yeah, perhaps. Anybody can give you this analogy today, and there really is no better way to say it. Now, there were two kinds of families when I was growing up. You were a Johnny Carson family or you were a Dick Cavett family. For those of you that are a little younger, you grew up, you were a David Letterman family or you were a Jay Leno family. But what do we got today? Well, a pretty clear picture. I've always been a Jimmy Kimmel fan. I think he's a good man. I think he's funny. I think he's a good interviewer. I think he's good. I think he's the best. He gives a 13-minute monologue Monday night telling the heartbreaking story of his son's birth and needing immediate open-heart surgery. And don't get scared. It has a happy ending. The surgeons did a masterful job. God was faithful. And for Jimmy Kimmel, his baby is home with his sister and his mother and his father. But, I mean, you know, just what a great guy. And then you got CBS's Late Show with Stephen Colbert facing backlash for a profane joke made in President Trump's, in his opening monologue about President Trump. Critics have the Fire Colbert trending on Twitter. Now, there'll be no accountability because he's left bashing right. Colbert was responding to Trump's interview with CBS journalist John Dickerson. Because, I mean, the gloves are off. Journalism is dead. So I told you, the one thing this election revealed more than anything is the death of journalism. The death of anything being even clever. It's just blatant, in your face, deliberate, no holds barred hatred. So he's responding to Trump's interview with CBS journalist, what a joke, John Dickerson, that aired Sunday and Monday on Face the Nation, in which the president jokingly said that he liked to call the show Deface the Nation. Colbert said Dickerson, quote, has way too much dignity to trade insults with the president of the United States, but that he didn't. And then he just kind of like loses control and goes into this volley of hatred, vitriol. I mean, it was just, I can't even play the clip. But the one that got the most uproar, the only thing your mouth is good for is being Russian President Vladimir's, the most vile name for a male genitalia, holster. I mean, even some of the left joined in the criticism with accusations that it was, well, it was anti-gay and was hate speech. Don't you love how the left responds? Can you imagine Johnny Carson, whether he liked Jimmy Carter, whether he liked Ronald Reagan or not, saying something so classless, so vile? You know, there's a little lesson in the law of diminishing return, that which is shocking today becomes normal tomorrow. And then what do you got to do to shock somebody tomorrow? I'm old enough to remember when Ellen did a little simple closed mouth kiss with a woman on a show. 20 years earlier, Laura Petrie and Rob Petrie, married, couldn't be filmed in the same bed. They had to be in twin beds with one foot on the floor in pajamas. Now you got a girl kissing a girl. Well, no wonder we got guys walking into girls' bathrooms. It's kind of like aging. I don't know how it came up the other day, but we were talking about reality TV and cameras, and I remembered the Today Show moved into my home and spent 3 days, sound men, cameras. And I was just making the simple point, you'd be shocked how after a while you don't even notice them and you just act normal and live. And it came up because I at least like to pee off my balcony. I was peeing off my balcony, and the cameraman's like, and I'm like, oh, I forgot about you guys. Some of them were laughing, talking about it. So I posted the video on Facebook. I can't believe how much I've aged in 11 years. And it never dawned on me until I saw it. Why? Because I'm looking in the mirror every day, aging a little bit at a time, and I don't even notice it. But, boy, you see a video from just 11 years ago. Wow, these kids have aged me. I've been looking at Barack Obama too much for the last 8 years. Did the presidency age him? I said, maybe a little. The other day, somebody put on a video clip of him in 2008. I was like, wow. He was unrecognizable. It looked like Barack's kid. That's how the law of diminishing return works. It's just daily turning more and more away from God, more and more towards hatred, more and more towards viciousness and crudeness and vulgarity. It's the how do you boil a frog? Put him in nice water, just slowly turn it up. He'll never jump until he's dead. But go watch an hour of Johnny Carson and then watch this. This is where we've come, America. And it doesn't say so much about Johnny Carson or as much about Stephen Colbert as it says about all of us. Because if Johnny Carson would have ever had this moment, there'd have been no Johnny Carson. He'd have been fired. And the left's opposition. Are you suggesting that being a C word, most vile word for male genitalia, holster for Vladimir Putin, you know, that there'd be something wrong with that? Only the gays are speaking out. You are the sickest, immoral, lost in chaos, worthless culture and country I have ever witnessed. You look like the Roman Empire in the throes of debauchery right before its fall. I hope you're enjoying the fiddler and the music. That's my comment on Stephen Colbert. I don't want you to think it got by me. So there's my top three favorite stories of the day. As for me and my house, we'll probably watch none of them, and if we do, it'll be Jimmy Kimmel. That's covering all the top stories. You know what that leaves? The Dan Manda Show.
Did you leave anything for me to talk about?
Well, one of the things that I couldn't talk about that I wanted to talk about most was we were talking about how other people's kids are always jerks, but we convince ourselves ours won't be. That's how we procreate.
Uh-huh.
And so I was just watching my daughters crowd you, put animals all over you, invade your space. Then my son ripping you with one-liners. I mean, there was a moment where Dan was looking at my son, Nick, going, how many more years before I can put him in afternoons? This is my next midday guy.
It was great. I was covered in rodents. I was backed into a corner.
And
it was awesome.
And then there's me going, kids, leave them alone. Stop being this way. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God. They all act like me. They're obnoxious.
Could you see the beads of sweat on my forehead dealing with you and your family and your children?
I can't share Nick's one-liner.
No.
Because it's of a personal subject. Yeah. But he nailed you.
He sure did. He sure did.
So, I'm thinking maybe I'll do 10 more years. I'll retire. We'll just slip Nick right into the shift. He'll just start criticizing management and pick things up right where I left off.
Absolutely.
Well, today on your show.
Coming up next, James Comey, of course, back in the news. A despicable act of stolen valor and a whole lot more. It's all straight ahead.
The only thing I listen to for about 20 minutes till I get to the golf course, The Dan Manda Show is next. All a part, and then Phil Valentine for the drive home. All a part of the Super Talk on the Superway. And I'll see you in the morning at 9 right here on WTN.